Right. Good evening, everyone. Hello, hello. All right, there we go. All right. Hello, hello, fam. This is Nika Sherelle, host of the ItCast Real Talk on Sex. Welcome to our episode this evening. Just a quick announcement. The ItCast is brought to you by the Nikita Sex Toy, designed for adventure, play, and social change. You can learn more about the Nikita Sex Toy at triggerhappytoy.com. And also support the ItCast on our Patreon page and learn more about our work at nikasherelles.com. That's nikasherelles.com. And this week's topic is real talk on love after loss. So do you believe in love after loss? We do. And we understand that it can be difficult to move forward through grief and trauma. But tonight we are bringing you our special guest, Anna Calibri. She is a grief counselor. And we go. Oh. And Anna, welcome to the show. There we go. There you are. Hi, welcome, welcome. Oh, how are you doing tonight?
Great. It's really good to see you, and you sound so pro in your intro.
Why, thank you. Thank you. Welcome. I do my best. So Anna, before we dive in, please tell us a little bit about yourself, culturally, your background, anything that you'd like for our audience to know.
Well, just in terms of grief and kind of my history there, I have a master's degree from UC Berkeley in gerontology, which is, in case you don't know, the study of older people. And so I've always kind of had an interest in older people and kind of some of the challenging things that they go through. And of course, if you age, then you have experienced a lifetime of loss one way or another. But I started my career in that field. And then my family experienced a tragedy where we lost our little girl, Chloe, to sudden infant death syndrome. And that kind of just changed my direction. And so I took some time off and I studied yoga and I became a yoga teacher. And then more loss, I went through a divorce and it was time to go pro. So I started a marketing agency because I had kind of done that in a past life in a dinosaur time when marketing was like about flyers and calling people on the phone. And so that has been great. And that's how I got to know Nika, was through my business, Calibri Digital Marketing. But really, I still wanted to go back to sort of my roots, which are about direct service. And so I'm actually completing my licensure as a social worker. And I'm doing grief counseling as part of that. And I absolutely love it. And I was honored to be invited today to be able to talk about such an important topic now and always, but we've all gone through so much loss in the past year collectively and individually, basically no matter who we are. And then kind of the title of your, of this topic, it's kind of like life is those two things. It's kind of all love and it's all loss. I mean, if you wanted to kind of think about really my philosophy, and of course there are no right answers here, but I kind of think of life as being made out of love, and yet we all have to go through so much loss. And so it can be applied to our personal intimate relationships and losing partners. But it can also be applied to losing parts of ourselves, or even growth and development involves loss in the form of change.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned in one of our earlier conversations was that like life is loss, you know, like we're losing things every day and it's almost to the point where we can be desensitized around it. I think it's really powerful that you're pointing out, you know, this past year alone, I think we like collectively we've lost more people than I say we, you know, like the collective we, but just in general, you know, this country, this world, we've lost a lot of people and we've been going through a lot of fear. And so there's a lot of space right now for tenderness and really just to allow that space to breathe. So I'm so grateful to have you on and sharing, you know, the work that you're doing and the powerful human that you are for really having us move through our grief such that we can continue to love and continue to heal and grow. So you mentioned a poem that you wanted to share that I thought was so powerfully beautiful. Do you have that?
Yeah, let me pull that up. This is one of my favorite poems. And in fact, we shared this at my daughter's funeral. All righty. Okay, so for those of you who don't know who he is, Khalil Gibran lived from 1883 to 1931. And he's the author of The Prophet, and he's Lebanese. So on joy and sorrow. Then a woman said, "Speak to us of joy and sorrow." And he answered, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the selfsame well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. When you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. Some of you say, joy is greater than sorrow, and others say, nay, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you at your board, remember that the other is asleep upon your bed. Verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty are you at standstill and balanced. When the treasure keeper lifts you to weigh his gold and his silver, needs must your joy or your sorrow rise or fall."
Yes, what a perfect depiction of life. Like we are all in this great spectrum and emotions, like we wouldn't enjoy joy without sorrow. We wouldn't know what it was. It wouldn't even be possible, and vice versa. So I really feel just that powerful, there's a powerful sweetness to it.
When you think of too, the partnership or the loss of a loved one, like an intimate romantic partner, and in the poem they say, you know, that which has been your delight is now your sorrow. And also when one, you know, is by your bed, by your board, the other one is in your bed. And so it also recalls this intimacy, which is about, you know, those intimate romantic relationships, but also the intimacy and the kind of sharpness and coolness of sorrow.
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, spousal and partner loss. You know, it's like it's really prevalent throughout the poem, and there's that thing about like having that deep intimate connection with someone and then having them go away. So can you share a little bit about how that shows up in your work?
Sure, that's it shows up all the time, and one of the things that sort of is the most poignant for me. Maybe if you've had a partner for 60, you know, or 65 years, and now what has to happen is you need to rebuild your life. And all of these habits, all of these things that you may have taken for granted, you know, maybe your loved one brought you a cup of coffee every morning, and now you have to figure out how to make your own coffee and it doesn't quite taste the same. And so it's not, I mean, there's so much embedded into that. Or, you know, another loss is you had a partner and they were taken very early in life, And so now you miss this whole future. You know, so all of like each partner loss is unique, and each person's response is individual. There are some universals that we talk about. And there's a writer called Warden, and he's talked about the four tasks of grief. And so the first task, and this is for any loss, is to accept the reality of it. And many times when people have lost their partners or any other loss, they actually just can't believe it. There's a sense of shock. And so if you ask them cognitively, did I lose my partner? Of course, they would say yes. But on the other hand, it doesn't feel true. And the person may come home, or they may open a letter and they may be ready to hand that, you know, letter to their partner. Or they may just expect their partner will be sitting on the couch in the evening. Some people still hear the voice of their loved one, and we'll talk about that later because that could even be a good thing. But effectively, the first task of grief is to accept the reality. But the bad thing about accepting the reality is that now you have to feel the full force of the pain. And so usually people, they have to sort of what we call titrate. So you can't accept this kind of devastating loss all in one blow. So first there's shock to protect you and your nervous system. And then gradually you come to accept it. But then you have to face all of the intense emotion that goes along with that. And it can just leave people feeling stripped so bare and so raw and so vulnerable and so lost. And it's a very tender time. And it's also time sometimes people isolate, and that can also be a good thing in certain measures. They need to be alone to heal. But they also need community. And so when you're wanting to support grievers, trying to meet them where they are, do they need space or do they need comfort? It's very disorganizing to be in acute grief. So it's hard just to get very basic things done. For those who have been depressed, it has things in common, you know, symptomatically with depression, but it's not depression. It's not a pathology. And so then the next task of grieving, and this is, for me, this is a really beautiful part of grieving that is under-recognized in, I think, our culture and in many cultures, is the idea of continuing bonds. So how will you keep a relationship with your loved one? And I think Mexican culture does that really beautifully with Day of the Dead. So they have their altars and they have relationships with the dead. And I would encourage anyone who loses a partner to keep a relationship with their loved one. Now the hugs and kisses and the closeness, that won't be there, of course. And so the sorrow and the pain will be, but knowing that the impact that person had on you and the love that you shared with them will never go away. And so continuing bonds is about how do you memorialize them? Do you speak with them, you know, in your head, or do you kiss their picture every day, or do you set up a foundation for them, or do you remember their birthday, you know, and do something special every day on that, you know, every year on that day? Absolutely. So that's a task. Yeah. Do you have a question about that?
I was just going to say that's really beautiful, you know, really looking at, you know, the first two steps, acceptance and continued bonds. You know, I love what you said about like setting up a foundation and, you know, like maintaining that relationship. I've seen it happen where people like, you know, like talking to their loved ones and remembering and acknowledging. We have Memorial Day, like things like that. Mm-hmm. But I have never heard it laid out like that, and like really owning that there's a relationship to honor and there's still something that you that feeds the soul back. So yeah, thank you, and please continue.
All right, so with that too, I mean, you're always welcome to ask your loved one, your dead loved one, you know, gosh, this difficult situation came up, what should I do? And, you know, we can look for clues and hints, we may hear a voice, we can journal, we can write letters, you know, so there's so many ways to continue bonds. So I think that that's kind of a misnomer of how we treat death in our country or in many parts of the world, which is that that loss is complete and total. But I think there's hardly anything in life that is complete and total. And so kind of accepting that ambiguity and depending on your spiritual beliefs, you know, too, because I think even sometimes people who don't feel like they believe in spirit are surprised to find that they still feel a closeness. And so I don't know if that's made out of hormones or what, but still, you know, there's that surprise for many people. Or then too, there are people who are deeply religious who are disappointed to find that they don't feel it. So there again, too, it's not, you know, about how it should be. It really is about how it is for people. And so then, and this is especially, I think, important for people who have lost partners or children. This is the fourth step, which is what's your vision for the future? How are you going to move forward into your life? And we don't talk about getting over a loved one.
Sorry to pause. Did you cover step three? Did I miss step three?
I think you missed step two. Shock. Step two was sorrow, pain, you know, intense emotion.
I think I missed shock. Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you. Continue moving forward.
So three is continuing bonds and four is moving forward. But, and you know, so we talk about getting through it. Sometimes people say, you know, like, I want to get over this or I want to move on. So we don't really encourage that as grief counselors. We might talk about something more like integration, integrating the loss, which, you know, is part of continuing bonds too. But the thing is that if you were married to somebody for 5, 10 years, you were their partner for 60 years, they were your child, you know, whoever it's going to be, you're not going to forget them. That's not going to happen. And so I think people have that cry, you know, they want to feel better. They want to be in less pain. And most likely they will be. So those things that I'm talking about are kind of a, you know, spiral. So you spiral in and out of denial, in and out of strong emotion, in and out of feeling connected to your lost loved one, and in and out of feeling like, hey, I'm relatively okay and I'm moving on into, oh gosh, this is so painful. And I can really say that, you know, my daughter died 21 years ago and I sometimes still feel very acute pain, you know, usually around her birthday. And so I'm glad for myself that I don't feel like I'm going to get over her. I don't want to get over her. She was my daughter. And I wouldn't want to get over my partner either. I don't, you know, that's not in those circumstances. And even other kinds of loss like divorce or, you know, something like that. Do you want to get over them and forget about them entirely? Or do you want to say, what was rich about that? What was beautiful? How did I grow? How am I different as a result of that relationship? How can I use all of that love or all of that hope or all of those dreams and use those as fuel for what I have now in my life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really hearing, I mean, and this is, it's easy to say, but like grief is a process and it's a process that we dance with, not just once, but over time as we continue to grow and expand. I love that you referred to it as a spiral. It's like we may not ever know where we are in the conversation until it hits us and to not try to force it away. Not try to force it like, I'm not gonna feel this way. I think when I look at grief, it's easy in the beginning when like the first parts happen and the shock is there and the acceptance is there to just want to shut it down. Like I don't want this experience. And that having a healthy relationship with grief is one of the things that I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having a healthy relationship really with your own mortality. Which grief gives you an opportunity to do. Not only are they going to die, but so will you. And a lot of times when I say that, people kind of view me as, you know, bringing some bad news that they weren't aware of. And I think we're not typically keyed into that, that very great truth that any moment could be your last. And so, if at all possible, keying into the present moment and feeling the aliveness of it, even if that aliveness is painful, it's possible to hold both sometimes. Sometimes it's overwhelming. Sometimes you just have to scream and wail and say no. But I think a very important part of the grief process is self-compassion. So whatever you bring to it, whatever your resistances are, whatever you can welcome, to be very gentle and forgiving with yourself, because it is a wound. I mean, it's a moment of, I think I've said this before, but just rawness and openness. And so in that sense too, it is a creative kind of moment, because you're broken open. And so the possibilities are really there. I mean, it's kind of sky's the limit, because you're in free fall. You know, the thing, the world you had is shattered. And this is how it is with the pandemic too, isn't it? Because we lost so much of what we thought was real. You know, we thought it was real to hop on Muni. We thought it was real to go have a boring Thanksgiving and eat too much. You know, we thought all of that was real. And it turned out, actually, no, it was kind of a set of agreements or whatever it was. And now we're coming out, maybe some of us. I know in certain places, COVID's definitely on the rise. But when this is over, there's nothing for us to go back to, because that's gone. I mean, and I can see that. You know, I live close to the Fillmore in San Francisco, and I was walking down the street, so many shops closed, just gone. Those businesses are gone, and those people are grieving.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and of course they're grieving. I mean, maybe some of them are, you know, saying, oh, thank God this moved up my retirement and I'm going to go to Barbados, or, you know, whatever. But I mean, effectively, still you walk down the street and that's all gone, and it will never be how it was. I mean, that's just one kind of materialistic example, but that's a thing that also people can realize when they go through a loss, is it will never be the same. You can't go back. And that's kind of how life is. There's no backwards in life. There's really only now, but I kind of feel like it's a now facing forward.
Yes. Sorry, there, I think there's a little bit of background noise, but yeah, I'm really hearing like that constant change element and being able to be okay with change, with life, with the mortality of everything is a really powerful place to stand and a really powerful place to come from when being present to how special and precious life actually is. It's like if we didn't get that it was finite, we would take it for granted.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, I get to have this conversation with you. And when things are safer, you know, we'll get to be in person and have a hug and this kind of thing. And you're alive and I can hug you, or I can have this conversation. I can ask you a question. You know, I can check in with you. And, you know, I can, I don't know, bug you about writing some social media posts, or, you know, whatever I can do. I can be annoying, you know, and we get to do that together. And it actually is really beautiful and fantastic. You know, like if you annoy me, or if I have a back pain, or, you know, something like that, that is proof I'm alive.
Right.
And I get to struggle and suffer through that. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, I can't always feel that within myself. Like if something stressful is happening, like what I was telling you earlier, that I was having a problem with one of my kids. And just now in talking about this, I was like, I get to have a problem. He's alive. He's breathing. You know, I mean, it's pretty great.
Absolutely. Like there's so much appreciation and gratitude. It's a blessing. It's a blessing. Like I get to be annoyed. I get to be frustrated. And if they weren't there, like that would be a missing. That would be the missing.
Right. That would be the sharp, agonizing pain.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Can we talk a little bit about like the difference between trauma versus grief?
Sure. So all trauma has grief, but not all grief has trauma. But trauma is a loss, flat out. I mean, anything that traumatizes you means something was taken. And it could be your innocence, it could be your sense of security, it could be your safety. So any of that. But not all grief is traumatic. And I was thinking about it earlier when we were talking, and I was thinking, human beings are special in that we have this really wide range of emotion, and that is something special. So we can have the human experience is just a very broad experience. But I was thinking, and this might be something for your listeners to weigh in on, but I was thinking, grief is a natural part of life. And I wondered, is trauma a natural part of life? Now, we're the animals who mostly cause trauma. And so it is natural. Of course, it's natural. So I just have this bias against trauma. Like, I don't like it. But, I've had my share. So I kind of feel like trauma is that kind of mean thing where something's been done to you. Mm-hmm. And grief is maybe just as compelling and just as sharp, but it's not really an evil. It doesn't have, embedded within it kind of an injustice.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I view the difference. But when you've been traumatized, you will feel grief.
Mm. Yeah, I love that you brought in trauma is in the space of dealing with injustice. It's like we've got a lot going on in our social political climate around, things that have been very traumatizing as of late. And there's the injustice aspect, whereas dealing with the pandemic, there's just constant loss and this fear of loss. And so the trauma and the grief feel different around each one. And I'm just noticing how deeply we're moving through both of these spaces.
Actually, you just made me second guess myself again, because the pandemic in and of itself has been traumatic. And although actually that is an example of injustice too, because why did we have the pandemic? One reason that we've had the pandemic is because we've encroached in animal spaces and we are overpopulated and taking more than our share. Mm. And the animals need to be somewhere, and if we're in their space, then there's more space for interaction and kind of in an unhealthy way. So, and this happens too, when there's pools that aren't being used, there can be more malaria, and so there's people out there doing things that create imbalances. And so in that sense it is, but human made, but even if it wasn't, even if you said, no, the pandemic, you can't say why it happened, it just kind of happened. Like maybe the Spanish flu is a little more like that. Although even that one was also exacerbated by humans not living how we would naturally live. But anyway, so the thing is that the pandemic itself was traumatic because it was that loss of control and loss of understanding, but embedded within the pandemic, and of course you're completely familiar with this, was so much injustice that's ongoing. And so then you have kind of loss and fear. Now look, if there were a pandemic and we were all greeted, maybe each of us got a little angel or something like that, and someone said, oh, you know what? We're going to have this pandemic, but I love you and I cherish you and I'm going to listen to you and I'm going to be there with you through the whole thing. And, if you need something, like if you need, some protective gear, I'm going to provide that to you. If you need some medicine, I'm going to be there. I'm going to figure out a way that if you're sick, you don't have to be alone. I'll be there for you. That would be grief. There would still be pain, but that isn't what happened. It really wasn't. it didn't work out that way. So, so the pandemic is it natural? Is it unnatural? Is it, neutral, or is it, kind of an injustice in a way? That's not exactly what we're talking about, but the pandemic is huge because in the United States, at least 500,000 people, all of their families, what do they estimate? 11 people at least per death. That was a direct loved one of theirs.
Yeah, exactly. And it ties deeply into what we're talking around grief, and just allowing for that space around healing, being able to move forward and to create something new. So for the families and the people and everyone out there who are dealing with that type of loss or losing a loved one right now, can you talk about that the personal identity and shifting into a created identity?
Right. Okay. So, first of all, when people come to me and they've lost particularly a spouse or a partner, I think we mentioned already that basically all of their routines are disrupted. Like the way that their life is no longer that way. So, if you and I are partners and you're the one who's in charge of taking out trash, I'll say I'm the one and I die. Now, all of a sudden you don't have that person who takes out the trash. And that may seem like a little thing, but then it gets into maybe complex financial things or, whatever. So there's just this whole structural shift. And then another one is, now let's say you're a widow. And so before you had the identity of partner, but now you have to move through the world and people are giving you this new label, and you have this new label that most people don't really want to identify with at all, which is like widow. some people are uncomfortable being called like single or this or that, but widow is really not a very welcome term for most of us. And it just sounds sad and lonely. And, and that's not how people want, to move in the world. So there's a loss of identity, there's a loss of routine. And then there are so many other embedded losses. I mentioned my philosophy is that we're animals. And so here you don't have your animal, to just cuddle with. And I think we need that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And during the pandemic, it's just been so sad, because grievers haven't necessarily been able to even get a hug, and that's awful. So, and then some grievers, they weren't really adept at Zoom or anything like that. And so the isolation could be pretty profound. So I might've kind of gone off into a little bit of a tangent, but the idea behind it is that when you lose your identity, and I think most of us have gone through a period where we've lost our identity. Maybe it was when you became a teenager and you were no longer a child and you could feel that people looked at you in a different way and, certain things changed, maybe about your sexuality or about what people expected of you or, things like that. And, it's a really often troubling time for teenagers. Like, they're a little grumpy, a little crazy. So, a griever's kind of like that too, like where, all of a sudden, first of all, such strong emotion. And a thing I wanted to mention to you before, which we didn't cover, was the common grief reactions. And so I think I'll just bring it in now, which is just that grief is a physical experience. It's an emotional experience. It's a cognitive experience. It's a spiritual experience and it's a cultural experience. So if you're used to having a partner to navigate all of that with, you just don't have that anymore. So you might have aches and pains. Well, who's going to bring you an aspirin? Or you might be forgetting about the bills. Well, who's going to remind you? So it's just a whole rebuild. And that is very painful. And I'm not wanting to minimize that at all. But given that grief is a universal, given that all of us will experience loss, more or less devastating, and some of it will just be even the loss of ourselves. Like, I won't be the same me in 20 years that I am now already. You know, I can't see as well as I used to see, that type of thing. And that's a loss, and it's an inconvenience. It's more of an inconvenience to me now than, you know, maybe a loss of hearing or, you know, something like that would be maybe a more devastating loss, but still we're all just changing and we're going to experience loss personally, physically, all the way to something, you know, pandemic level. But you don't have a intimate partner. And some people too, just the way our culture is situated, certain groups of people don't have that many friends beyond even their spouse. So what we can think of, and this is a hard thing to think of, is profound loneliness and longing. And when I'm confronted with grievers who are just feeling that profound loneliness and that profound longing, I just feel so moved by that, because that's kind of, it's really so fundamental to being human, but so sharp, so painful. So, you know, I can kind of picture like windswept halls or, you know, something. It just empties you out. And so people will come to me with the question quite often, how am I going to do this? Yeah. And another common grief reaction actually is some type of suicidality or suicide ideation. And so it's very normal to think of death, especially if you've lost your partner. And it isn't necessarily pathological unless it, you know, keeps going and ends up turning into some kind of plan or, you know, something like that. And so that is something too that, you know, we should think about putting into the resources at the end, is just that there are grief hotlines. And if you're a griever who's kind of moved from grief into depression into, you know, some kind of feeling like you might want to harm yourself or you have some sort of plan, then we would urge you to reach out to someone and break isolation and talk about that. But short of those kinds of feelings, that is something that can only really be got through by living it. Mm-hmm. And so you have to tolerate, you know, that pain. And crying can help. When it gets to be too much, distraction can be a great tool. Sleeping can be good, and grievers are often very tired at the beginning of their process because it's just pretty exhausting. You know, being with friends. And then this is where too, though, as you move through the process, in the beginning, maybe it's mostly raw pain. And then there are those flashes and moments where actually you feel yourself waking back up to the world. And then there can be guilt. Mm. And this is where I think continuing bonds can come in, because you can think of your loved one and you could say, would they like me to be happy? Would they want me to be able to experience joy? And I mean, you know, in the example where it's us, you know, and let's say I died, you know, you could ask, you could talk to me, you could say, Anna, I'm thinking about dating, you know, would that be okay? And you can just say into your heart, yes, she would want me to be happy. She would want me to be fulfilled. She would want me to explore relationships. You know, she's in the grave. She hopefully is fully enlightened now and only wants the best for me, has given her ego aside. You know, so yes. Because that's, you know, kind of right to the point of what you're talking about. And I think things people have questions about, like, can I date, or when can I date?
That's great. Like, the, will I be able to find love with someone else? And I love that you're talking about like that continued bond and really bringing the conversation into it. It also reminds me of when we were talking about like doing shadow work and like healing from that guilt, like ways to heal from the guilt, the resentment, releasing the judgment of the self. I think often when people are looking and thinking, oh, my partner would want me to be happy versus my partner wouldn't want me to do that, any of the bad and the negative and the wrong connotations to me seem like they're coming from a place of self-judgment. Yeah. So what do you say more about like that it's like finding love with a new partner, being able to move forward?
Right. So I think we all kind of carry storylines about how things are supposed to be. And that's where there can be that really beautiful side to how death and grief undo you, and you're undone, and you're in free fall, and you don't have an identity, or it's been greatly altered. So now is a time when you can say, and in the beginning, of course, this won't quite be possible. And also, it's tender to bring this up with people. Like, I wouldn't advise anyone listening to say, oh, hey, you know, your loved one died and now you can just have a new identity, you know, or something like that. No, that would be not advised. But
Deeply
as people,
insensitive.
right? But as people kind of heal and strengthen and have, you know, can kind of move into their resiliency a little bit more, that is when they can also start to explore, well, how do I want my life to be? And there's actually this really beautiful quote from Camus, and I don't have it memorized, but he does say, when you lose someone you love, they were blocking part of the sky. And now they're not blocking part of the sky. And that is true for all relationships. I mean, in a relationship, we are in an agreement. And so we do things a certain way. And so maybe we have coffee at 7. But really, maybe secretly you wished to have it at 7:30 all those years. Well, now you can have coffee at 7:30 and you don't have to feel guilty because this is part of the natural order of things. And so it's kind of like there's a season for everything. So there was a season to be with that person and to have coffee at 7, or watch more action films than you had thought you would, or, you know, whatever. And now it's time to have coffee at 7:30 and watch documentaries. This is the season. And so then too, and, you know, of course, grievers come who've lost loved ones, and some of them, you know, are quite old. A lot of times people lose their partners later in life, and things like dating and sexuality aren't as much on their mind. And so it's also very personal. Like, where are you in your life? What's important to you now? And so, you know, if you lost a loved one when you're quite young, and or say you lost your spouse before you had children and you've always wanted children, and that could feel like an amazing betrayal. Like, we were going to have children together, but actually we're not going to now. Can I still do that? Can I fall in love with somebody and else and have children with them? Would that be okay? And I mean, the only answer I can give is yes. I mean, you know, death caused that separation, and you are alive, and you still have your gifts to give, and you still have your, I mean, it's that you're alive, and you sort of, I'm not even going to say you have an obligation to life, but as humans, you know, we have something to give. And if we choose to give it, so much the better. I'll put it that way instead. And so, you know, you're looking for love, other people are looking for love and partnership. And so, you know, it may take a while, it could take many years. And again, no judgment. Or if you're ready right away, like if you feel like, gosh, you know what really feels good to me when I'm grieving is that I want to feel close and I want to have physical contact with somebody. Yes. I mean, we often advise people who are grieving to hold off on big decisions for at least a year, because it is an altered state. And so, you know, maybe don't sell the house and move to Florida. Just maybe wait a few months on that. But if truly you do say to yourself, this is what I need now, you know, in this situation, then as long as you're listening, you know, to your heart and you're doing things that are for your growth, then there's not really any rules.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Like, you know, putting that year on it to allow to come out and through all of the reactions and all of the things that we've talked about. I can hear that really gives that time and that space to heal, or to, you know, like at least not fully heal, but to really get into the healing process and to begin to make choices from that new identity and that like new personhood that's being developed.
Yeah, I like that, that new personhood, right? And the world will just look so different. And I mean, I know a lot of that is very painful, but I really feel, and from my own experience, this has been true, that, you know, the human heart is meant to break and it's equally meant to heal. And infinite healing is really what we do, I think. So we just can keep, in some ways, I always say always getting better. But, you know, as you live through life and you have experiences, if you allow them to hone you, then there's a way in which you can be getting better, always growing, always increasing in wisdom, and using your experiences to enrich other people and yourself. And I think your loved one would want that for you.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I'm hearing to be able to like hone, to heal, and to acknowledge and cherish life and even celebrate the sorrows and the losses and to be able to like come full circle. It's like, that's like life. It's a cyclical experience.
It is, right. Like earlier when we were talking, you were talking about the seasons. And so, you know how sometimes this happens to me more in the fall, but I'll have a moment where all of a sudden I say, ah, it's fall. I can just kind of feel that sharpness that I didn't feel before. And so of course that means the days are going to get shorter and I don't always like those short days. And, you know, sometimes I miss, you know, the bright daylight and things. Is there a question?
Yeah, we have a really good question from the audience. Hi, Tiffany. Says, can you give advice on when you're told you're not the same person?
I would like to, but I maybe need the question to be fleshed out a little bit more.
Yeah, so they mentioned they're told this often, and we could get maybe a little bit more framing around that question. That would be great. I'm guessing it's like not the same person that you were before the loss of a loved one. Like maybe like they've changed and how to deal with that.
Oh, I see. Like people are kind of saying your loss changed you, and maybe they're not saying it's in a better way. Almost like it's carrying a little judgment there. Mm-hmm. Well, get rid of that friend. No, I'm kidding. it's your mother, right? You can't get rid of her. Yeah. So that's not really a very nice thing to say to someone unless you've really, you know, I mean, if they're concerned about you, like you seem, you know, like they're worried about your health. Like we talked about, you know, kind of things moving into depression or something like that. So if it's coming from a place of actual concern, like they think you're different and they're worried and for legitimate reasons, that's something to think about. Or if it's something like, and people are very impatient with other people's grief. Like I'm saying, I lost my daughter and I feel sad about it sometimes 21 years later. And I expect from time to time, I will always feel that way. But a pretty common pattern is that you feel grief and for a period of time, people are really there for you and then they kind of drop away. And so there's kind of a loneliness, but you are sad. So if you were the party girl before, you can't do that right now. And close friends and people who can really be there for you will recognize that. You know, they'll let you have that space, but they get tired, you know, before you do. And then kind of interestingly, you may get tired of you after a while too, because it's kind of can get for some grievers, even a little boring to still feel bad for so long. Like, oh, I just want to be done with this. But yet they're not done because they still feel sad. So the truth, on the one hand, whatever your friend says, like, oh, you're not the same person anymore, that is true. You've gone through a transformative experience. And then two, this is a time more or less for them to be there for you and to meet you where you are. And so, you know, if you're feeling kind of strong, you might say, yeah, I don't even feel like myself, you know, let's get to know me, you know, because that's really true. Or two, you might be able to mention to them, you know, that it feels a little uncomfortable to hear it worded that way, because it's kind of scary not feeling like yourself. Or if you're feeling kind of compassionate and curious, you could say to them, huh, what do you mean by that? What's that for you that I'm different? Do you miss me? Do you miss the old me? Like, you know, or if you're feeling kind of like fed up with life, you can say, oh, I hate that you say that. Go away and eat some chocolate, or, you know, something, I don't know. Yeah. So I hope that went towards answering the question, because there's, because I don't know exactly what the speaker meant, but those are some of the things they could mean. You are different. You have gone through something. You can't show up the way that you did before necessarily. And you might not even want to, because of course, grief causes an examination of your values, and it causes you to look and kind of say, well, you know, some people say, I see my own mortality in this. So maybe I don't want to show up how I used to show up. Maybe I've looked at this situation. I've said, I want my life to be different. I certainly did that after my daughter died. I felt like it's time for me to heal my life. I really felt that. And so, you know, and actually that altered the relationships around me. And that's true too. That relationships alter. So your identity alters, but also your place in the constellation alters too.
Yes. Yes. And thank you. Thank you. That's powerful. You know, I really love what you said about, like, let's get to know me. Because it does, it changes, it can change us at our core, and we're always becoming new people, but that's one of those things that's like a demarcation line in life. And that's so beautiful. Like, yeah, like, let's get to know who I am now, because it's a part of that discovery. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And I felt like when my daughter died, that everything before it and everything in front of it, like, that was sort of the pivotal moment of my life, around which I kind of feel like the past and the future sort of swirled. Like, that was the defining moment. And I'm grateful for it. I mean, it took me a while to feel that gratitude. But this is what I mean too. You mentioned celebration. I felt like I went through that and emerged a better person. Now, I would keep my daughter and be my regular bad self, but this isn't what I got, right? Because you just get the cards that are dealt, and then that is what you work with. And so I consider it a miracle that I was able or willing to just let myself be changed by the experience, to say, God, this is so painful and I don't want this and I reject this, but I'm going to accept it because I have no choice. And that is what happens. Death is one of those things that gives you no choice. And when you have no choice, you must surrender or fight forever. And that's a choice. You can fight forever, but it'll be painful and challenging. Whereas if you let go into it and let grief carve you, like we talked about in the poem, you can emerge, you know, with something really creative and beautiful and celebratory. And so today I'm able to say, even though, you know, sometimes I do feel those moments of longing, you know, for my daughter, even now, you know, I'll sometimes just go, oh, I'd love to see how she was, or, you know, whatever. Or, you know, could I have a hug or kiss her face, or, you know, something like that. And I think people feel that way about their partners too. Like, oh, I just want maybe one more hug. But nevertheless, if you let it work on you, if you let it wash through you, if you let it destroy you, you maybe can come out, you know, yourself, but brighter, wiser, more beautiful. So it's a matter of kind of tolerating it as something that works on you.
Yes, that's beautiful. It makes me think of like, this experience is our time to really polish the soul, and polishing like our being. It has its bumps and it can be abrasive and painful, but like every experience that we have really shapes us into what we're becoming for the next opportunity, the next plane of existence, the next stage in life. This is beautiful. Anna, let's talk about some of the resources that you wanted to share with our listeners tonight. I know that there were some very good ones in your collection.
Oh, right. Okay. So I have a couple of books. One of them is The Wild Edge of Sorrow. And I would recommend that book to all grievers. And then there's The Five Invitations. So those are two books that I think are really, they're just, The Wild Edge of Sorrow really explores kind of our connection to nature, to spirituality, to different cultures, to looking at the grief embedded in, some of the traumas that people have experienced, especially in marginalized communities, but really in all societies over all times, and things about like the loss embedded in what we expected out of life, but didn't get, just all the, so it really looks at loss in every way, but also lets you see how that can be so transforming. So for people who are kind of interested in diving in. And then the other book, The Five Invitations, also is kind of a handbook about for how to be. And when you are kind of in that space, that kind of middle space of grieving and having lost a partner, that's a time too, I think, to look and say, well, how do I want to be? And so that book with The Five Invitations kind of has five questions that you can answer. I will say it's quite poignant. It was written by the actual founder of the Zen Center Hospice, which is the first hospice in the Bay Area. And so there are plenty of really moving stories, amazing stories in there. And then two, depending on where you're tuning in from, like the National Grief Hotline is really only a telephone call away. Do you want me to Google it right now, or do you want to add it to the resources later? I just don't have it on the tip of my...
No worries. We can get that up and post it in the chat for you. thank you for mentioning it. And then Absolutely. You can go ahead and share about some of the others. Right.
And then we should also put in there too the suicide hotline, just because if people are moving away from, kind of a healthy grief into something more pathological, or might feel in too much despair, then I'd like them to have that resource as well. So those are some good things to get started on. Beautiful. But if you're lonely too, you can always call that National Grief Hotline. If you're lonely, if you're sad. And I think this is so beautiful, these hotlines. What is very true in the United States is that if you need to talk to somebody, you can pick up the phone, you can call, and somebody will answer, and they want to talk to you. And so if you're really grieving and your friends, or you're afraid your friends are tired of you, or whatever, you can make that phone call, and you'll kind of be making that person's day. They wanted to help. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. And then this was just a little bit of a funny one, but you mentioned this earlier. Could you share a little bit about the WeCroak app?
Oh, right. I forgot that. So that comes from a meditation practice that monks do, where they meditate on death 5 times a day. And so you just have to, it's WeCroak, WeCroak. And I think it might just be for iOS right now. I'm not sure if there's an Android version yet, but it's really great. So there's a challenge every day it reminds you five times that you're going to die. But then every weekend, every Sunday, there's a leap and it gives you some sort of kind of challenge. Like one of the first ones I did was to go into a graveyard and find somebody you thought was interesting and then Google them. And it was quite interesting because I found this French lady and there were these death records, and I could look through all these death records for the East Bay and even the names of illnesses have changed over time. And not that much time. So just how people refer to things changes, it's all there. But so when you do then the first 40 of those challenges, then you get like new features. So you can like upload pictures of family. And so then one of your reminders of death actually is, here's my little boy. He's going to die. I'm going to die. You're going to die. That's real. But then that can open the doors to that intense gratitude we talked about earlier. And that's the purpose of it. And then you rate yourself after every week of, do you feel more like you accept death? And I told Nika, I'm stuck at 3 out of 5. I'm doing my best, but, and I'm waiting for that moment where I feel like I'm at a 4, where I've kind of accepted the reality of death. But right now I have a lot of places I want to travel. I have a lot of books I want to read. I really have a lot of hugs and kisses that I want to get. I have a partner, I have children, all of these people I know don't want me to be dead. And so I don't feel ready right now.
Yeah.
All apps aside.
I love that. No, I love that. It's really getting us present to the fact that we're going to die so that we're not walking through life dead right now. Like everything that you just said is there's so much aliveness in it. And I love that it's a meditation app. I have some friends that are, I'd say, a little bit morbid, and I'm going to tell them about this app just because they're going to love it. And I think that's beautiful. So yeah. All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap up. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is the ItCast, Real Talk on Sex. You can contribute to the ItCast by visiting our GoFundMe page, and you can find out more about our work on Patreon as Nika Sherrells and at nikasherrells.com. That's nikasherrells.com. Thank you. And we will see you next week here live.
Thank you.